The University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and major public research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries at UWM today. Here's the host of UWM Today, Tom Lujak, Vice Chancellor for University Relations and Communications.
No matter where you live, one of the primary concerns of choosing a neighborhood is whether or not you and your family will be safe. On this edition of UWM Today, we're going to talk about a program that has brought UWM researchers, the Milwaukee Police Department, and members of a neighborhood organization together to launch a crime reduction initiative. It's in the Washington Park neighborhood, a part of the city that has tremendous promise, but also an area dealing with its share of difficulties caused by crime. Joining us in the studio today are Kimberly Hassel, Associate Professor in the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare at UWM, Mike Schmitz, who's a lieutenant with the Milwaukee Police Department, and Matt Melendez, who's the project coordinator for the initiative we're discussing today. And Matt and Mike, maybe we could start with you first framing the place itself, Washington Park. Matt, give us a sense of where it is in Milwaukee. It's about 15,000 people or so living in that neighborhood.
Yes, the Washington Park neighborhood is approximately got 10,000 residents. It's about 130 blocks. It has a lot of wonderful neighborhood assets. It is named after a Frederick Law Olmsted Park that's 120 acres large, which is really kind of the center, and features a lot of amenities that families love to use: swimming pools, a senior center, a wonderful band shell, the Urban Ecology Center. And so it really has a number of park, recreational, and family user-friendly assets, three primary schools. It has the busiest neighborhood library in the city of Milwaukee, as well as a lot of very strong family-serving nonprofit agencies that we partner with.
And a relatively recent construction, a lot of homes and some businesses have opened up over the last few years.
Yeah, the neighborhood has benefited from a lot of new development by nonprofit organizations that have created about 150 new affordable apartment units, as well as Habitat for Humanity that has made Washington Park its primary target area for the next 3 to 5 years, and will be making improvements between new construction, rehab, and helping existing homeowners of about 150 properties.
So a good place to live. It has lots of promise, but as we said at the beginning of the program, not without its challenges. And Mike, as a lieutenant in the Milwaukee Police Department, you're out on the street. Give us a sense of what those challenges are.
Well, what Matt said makes the neighborhood quite interesting. The park is beautiful. It's historically been a great area in the city, but the neighborhoods surrounding the park are perhaps some of the most challenged in the city. The violent crime rate in the area is quite high. There is a lot of property crime and other issues that the police are responding to on a regular basis. So very challenged neighborhoods, But as a police department, we have great hope because of the things that Matt said, all the different things that the area has going for it, the community partners in particular.
And that's where Kimberly comes in. Kimberly, you're a researcher at the university and the social welfare school. Tell us about this crime reduction initiative that you're instrumental in launching.
Okay. Well, I'm the research partner on the project. The first phase, there's two phases. The first phase is the planning phase. And my job during the planning phase is to identify the hot spots, you know, concentrated areas of crime where we can target to impact the entire neighborhood, and to talk to the residents to determine their needs, their concerns, what they, you know, what are the problems they're experiencing, what do they want done about it. I'm essentially a conduit. And then I bring that information back to the committee with MPD and Washington Park Partners and United Methodist Children's Service, LISC and Safe and Sound, very strong committee, the district attorney's office. I bring that information back to them, and that's where we are now, and they're coming up with strategies to impact crime.
And it sounds like the beauty here is that you're not presuming that you all know the answers. You're actually going out and talking to the people who are most directly impacted, and that's the residents.
Exactly right. So Matt organized 10 focus groups, which resulted in 354 single-spaced pages of notes. I'm currently analyzing those. It's been really fascinating. I've met some terrific people who are very open. They have a lot of experience, and they're willing to share it and willing to work together to help their community.
Well, you've described the promise and some of the challenges in the neighborhood from your perspective. What are you hearing in those interviews? You've talked to over 300 people. Are they hopeful? Are they despondent over these challenges that are there?
I think it's mixed. Their response is mixed, but I do think it would be premature and disrespectful to talk about the findings from the focus group here over the media before actually addressing them and bringing it back to the community members who participated. But I think it's mixed. I think most people are hopeful. Would you say that, Matt?
I think the fact that residents took the time to come to these focus groups when they have so many other pulls, right? I mean, family, jobs, church, their own household, you name it. And to me, I was astonished and encouraged by the fact that people took time out on a Saturday morning, a Thursday night, a Monday night to stay as long as it took to have this meaningful conversation about safety in their neighborhood. So I felt overall, there are hurdles and challenges, but that we have a real good opportunity here.
Are they open to this sort of initiative?
They are. I think they're grateful. They're grateful for the attention. They're grateful for the help.
Because sometimes we've seen situations where people living in a neighborhood view folks who come to help them as the great white hope, the person who is going to essentially establish what that plan of action is going to be from afar. And that could almost make things worse, couldn't it?
That's exactly right. And that's why we wanted to talk to the residents. That's why we did the focus groups and we reached out to them. We didn't want to come in and say, this is what we need to do to fix your area. We wanted to say, what do you need us to do? What is it that you want to see? What can we do to get you to mobilize on behalf of each other and take back your neighborhood? So we planned that approach. We didn't want to come in and said, we know what we should do. We came to the residents and we said, what do you want to do? What do you need? What can we do for you to impact crime in your neighborhood?
Lieutenant Schmitz, from your standpoint, what's the value of having folks like Matt and Kimberly at the table talking to the people that your officers see on the street every day?
Well, one thing that I'm pleased with is that the focus groups purposely did not involve the police. And so the citizens were talking to civilian people, and therefore I think we're getting better information from them. There's no question that a lot of the feedback that is coming through the focus groups relates to the police and the way we respond to community issues. And I think if we had been involved in those discussions, I think the information wouldn't have been as frank. And so I'm excited about it. I think it's a great opportunity to get some real positive feedback that the police can then use to respond better to community issues.
You said earlier that part of the problem is that this real promising neighborhood in the city is surrounded by some areas that have even perhaps greater challenges when it comes to crime. Does that make it different from other parts of the city that might see such an initiative going on? The fact that in a sense, this is a bit of an island with so much promise here, mm-hmm. surrounded by some not so nice parts of town.
Well, I think that's what gives us our greatest chance of success, which makes it such a great opportunity because they are perhaps the most challenged neighborhoods, but they have very close by a lot of resources in the community that they can draw upon, a lot of community activism, a lot of community partners and resources.
Well, let's turn over to Matt, because you spend a lot of time in the neighborhood. I described you as the project coordinator. What are some of those resources that already are part of the value that you found as you began the initiative?
Well, I think one of the biggest things is we talk about in our approach, which is called the Sustainable Communities Approach. It's a LISC model. LISC stands for the Local Initiative Support Corporation. This is a national model or approach to neighborhood revitalization. And it starts with our assets, which I mentioned some of them, the park, the assets within the park, the library, the organizations. And a big part of our neighborhood, which is a strength, are the people. And we've found a number of people in these focus groups that want to be an active part of the solution. And so really, they're a wonderful resource. They're the resource that is going to tell us what's going on their block, how we need to intervene on those crime or safety issues. And if community groups such as UMCS, United Methodist Children's Services, in our program, Washington Park Partners, and Safe and Sound can listen and be a liaison, pass that information on to the police department. That's a real positive and win. We can't be present on every block with our staff. The police department can't be present on every block with their staff. So to me, the resident engagement piece and residents' willingness to work with us, to have confidence of with confidence in us, is really the key here.
You know, in a lot of neighborhoods, you've got neighborhood watch groups. We see the signs in the windows. It's a safe house to come to. Do you find that in Washington Park today?
It's a big part of what we're trying to achieve. And what I would say is, in many neighborhoods similar to Washington Park, the traditional block watch, where there might be, 12 really active owner occupants on a block, may not be the perfect model. But if we can find those four people that are willing to participate, and the neighbors behind the alleyway and the neighbors up the street, what we get is block watch or block club clusters. And once those residents start to meet each other, then, we really get some synergy, some growth, and some strength.
So, Kimberly, as you go ahead and churn through the data that came out of these interviews, these focus groups, what's the next step from your standpoint as a sociologist?
My next step as a criminologist is to present the findings to the committee, and the committee comes up with strategies. I can advise them, maybe some best practices, but it's really up to them. Then the rest of another 2.5 years of the project, my goal is to evaluate the efficacy of their responses.
And so in terms of that modeling, the things that work in other places that might be applied here, is that something that will come out of the school at the university, or does that come from the police or from the neighborhood themselves?
Well, I think what we're working towards lends directly to Chief Flynn's policing philosophy, which is based on the broken windows theory of policing. And in very simple terms, the broken windows theory relates to the idea that if you picture a building in a neighborhood, for example, if a window is broken in the building and it goes unrepaired, that will lead to other windows being broken and then ultimately lead to a decline in the neighborhood. And at the same time, what we're talking about is also informal social controls within a neighborhood. What we're trying to do is to create neighborhoods that are free and comfortable to exercise their own informal social control within a neighborhood. And so the everything that we're doing with the Burn Initiative to this point is kind of feeding into that and based on those basic principles of policing. And so I think that's what makes this and gives me such great hope that this project is going to be successful, because we're all more or less talking in the same terms and from the same perspective in terms of how to solve the problems and create better neighborhoods.
Has this program been tried in any other Milwaukee neighborhoods to date?
Well, this particular initiative is called the Burn Criminal Justice Innovation Grant, and it just was formalized or an opportunity in late 2012 in Washington Park neighborhood, and the city of Milwaukee is really one of 14 communities in the nation to have this resource and this opportunity. So some of these approaches and theories have certainly been tried. We have this opportunity to really have the research component, which is a wonderful guide to coach us through the process, to give us meaningful information to make decisions so that we're not just being reactive. So it really is we have a larger capacity, really.
Kimberly, it sounds like you're really the linchpin here, because it appears that in perhaps other programs, they may not have had the benefit of the research that people like you would bring to the table.
I think that's probably true. It's been a great experience. I've learned a lot. I don't feel like a linchpin, but if I have held these groups together, then that's very good. I think Matt he's the project coordinator, and he's done a great job of coordinating. The Milwaukee Police Department applied for the grant. They're the fiscal agent. It was actually their primary interest, even in forging or building these community groups, as a coalition necessarily to impact crime.
But it adds one more important metric, because the police department has been tracking the crime, for years, right? So you can go ahead and pretty much pinpoint where the problem areas are. But in terms of that sort of research survey work done with the people who are in living in that neighborhood, that may have been one of the missing components.
Yeah, I mean, I think it really just illustrates the unique opportunity here that Byrne has given us to basically take the police that work very hard and do a fantastic job, community groups that are working hard, and then this researcher and say, okay, time out. We're going to keep doing what we need to do on a daily basis, but let's look at this very seriously. Let's be more efficient. Let's be more deliberate. And so, yeah, this three-year experience, I feel like, is really a great time to be extremely effective with our previous efforts moving forward.
Tom, if I could add to that real quick, the thing that the research brings to the table is that there's crime, and it's easy to measure crime. However, disorder is not as easily measured, and disorder is an important part of the broken windows philosophy. And so measuring the disorder and the public perceptions is a key part of the project, and so that's going to help us. And then tracking the data as we proceed will give us that validation of what we're doing and prove that we're making progress.
Break down, what's the difference between disorder and crime?
Well, interestingly, a lot of research shows that the public's perception of disorder is more tied to their feelings about their neighborhood than violent crime is, you know, and it may be because more people are exposed to disorder than they are to violent crime, even in high crime areas. And so
sort of quality of life issues,
exactly.
That broken window that you used as an example.
Exactly. And things, you know, lower level offenses like loitering and prostitution and drug use and things like that. And, you know, drunkenness, public drunkenness and things like that. That's the kind of disorder that people see all the time. And the research that the police department operates under knows that people are more concerned about that in a lot of ways. And the surveys that we're doing in conjunction with the Byrne Grant, not to reveal any too much information, but they are revealing that people continue to be concerned about disorder in their neighborhoods.
You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. So good to have you with us. Joining us in the studio, Kimberly Hassel, who's an associate professor in the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare at UWM. Next to her, Mike Schmitz, a lieutenant with the Milwaukee Police Department, and Matt Melendez, who's project coordinator for this initiative that is designed to reduce crime in a very promising part of Milwaukee, the Washington Park neighborhood. Mike, I want to come back to you for just a moment and talk about those crime statistics themselves. In doing the research for the program, I came across a note that said that if you live in Washington Park today, your odds of being a victim of violent crime are significantly higher than in some other parts of the city. Is that correct?
That's true, and that, I think, goes hand in hand with the short-term historical facts that we see. It's they're challenged neighborhoods. There's the violent crime rate is high, and so that would certainly feed into what you're saying.
Yeah, and so that's why a program like this is so critical. If in fact you're going to make neighborhoods like Washington Park, where there's been great investment over the years, more livable, more attractive.
Correct. And that's our goal. In fact, the mission of the police department is to create and maintain neighborhoods capable of sustaining civic life. It's what Chief Flynn has set out to do. It's why the police department applied for the grant. And that's our goal in proceeding through this, is to create a livable, viable, vibrant neighborhood.
Matt, I want to ask you about some of the economic factors in the neighborhood. You often, when you talk about crime and people say what's behind it, often folks say a lot of it's economic. If a person doesn't have a job, they're going to be sitting on a stoop or on a curb and in a position to do things that probably aren't very productive. Is there any hopeful signs in terms of what sort of businesses are there or job opportunities might be on the horizon in Washington Park?
Well, I'm not a criminologist, but it's my clear sense that obviously economic opportunity or lack thereof, leads to crime. So in our neighborhood, we do have several census tracts that are very low income, well below the poverty line. Overall, our neighborhood, the median income is about $26,000. per household. In regards to businesses,
so you've got a ton of people who are either at or below the poverty level.
Absolutely, I think overall our adult employment rate is approximately 50%. So there are economic struggles in the neighborhood, and that it correlates with the instances of crime. Again, what our role is in this initiative is to try and engage families, to try and engage youth, get them into youth programs that exist in the neighborhood right there that a lot of families don't know about and have promising outcomes for those families and kids. There are businesses in our neighborhood that are doing well, as well as we found out last week that there's a new opportunity we don't know much about coming through from the feds called Promise Zones. And so it was something, from what I've heard, that President Obama mentioned in his State of the Union address. And by the end of July, the feds are going to come out with more information. But there are only going to be 30 neighborhoods in the United States that would qualify for this Promise Zones initiative. And what this would do would give neighborhoods such as Washington Park, again, the only one in the city that would have this opportunity, better connection to federal incentive programs and technical assistance to apply for those federal resources, and perhaps some economic incentives related to job creations, companies that might create jobs in the area. So it's something we're very much tracking, and it's a big need in the neighborhood for sure.
So Kimberly, you are the criminologist, and the hypothesis that economics and crime go hand in hand makes sense to you?
It does. There are many generators of crime. I mean, there are hundreds of variables that come into play that interact to cause crime. The key here is collective efficacy. Even if you have a poor community, unemployment's high, if you can get community residents to come together and mobilize and act on behalf of their neighborhood, you can impact crime. There's a lot of research showing that. So that's what we're trying to do. That's why it's so important to have the community engagement, to have them telling us what it is that they want, because we need to make a good faith effort, or the community, the police department, the community organizations, they need to make a good faith effort to address their needs in the hopes that they will rise up, that this won't be just another program where people come in and say, here's what we're going to do. We don't want that. We want them to take ownership of, take back their neighborhood, essentially.
I know you're going to allow the residents to help drive the program, but is there some thought already given in terms of how to create more modeling for the people who live there in terms of what their behavior might be like? I'm thinking more along the lines of leadership in the neighborhood. Is it possible that through this program you can teach people ways in which they can become more engaged, more involved, more responsible for the life around them?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, our initiative, the BURN initiative, is part of a greater effort in the Washington Park neighborhood called the Washington Park Partners is a sustainable communities approach. So our neighborhood actually has 7 active committees, an arts and culture committee, a business and jobs committee, an education committee, health and wellness, housing, a park committee because of the Frederick Law Olmsted Park, and safety committee. So we actually have residents and partners and all of these committees meeting monthly. So it's a very active community. All the time we're getting new residents to join these committees. All the time they're learning more information, not only about what's going on in the neighborhood, but the connectivity we have with the city. And that's really key to neighborhood is we've looked and learned in a training I was just taking that neighborhoods that stand by themselves aren't necessarily the strongest of neighborhoods. Neighborhoods that can utilize the strengths within as well as bring in other partners are really what's strong. So in our safety committee, we're continuously training residents about how to work with the police, how to work the police dispatch works, how the nuisance ordinance of the city of Milwaukee works. So that's really, really key, is working with residents, giving them information that they need, and really having them take the lead. And we're support. We work with them, not for them.
I think that's another benefit of the focus groups, because Matt was able to get people to come who you haven't really established relationships with, and we're hoping that they rise up and they're the informal leaders in their community and that they take ownership. I think that's promising. You think, Matt?
Absolutely. And people in the focus group said that is, we want you to work for us. And that's the best news we can have is that that they drive this. And that essentially we deliver information that's going to allow them to make decisions. We've seen that when we've gone into licensing committee meetings where a problem business that's been attracting bad behavior, negatively affecting the quality of life in the neighborhood, goes for a licensing opportunity. And we're able to research, along with assistance of the police department, how many calls for service that that establishment has had. And then the residents go to the license committee and say, hey, look at these 27 calls. This is not what I need. I need to be able to go to sleep at night so my children can go to sleep at night, so I can go to work, so they can go to school, et cetera, et cetera.
So, Mike, from the police department's perspective, as these ideas develop, as the neighbors living there say, here's what we want, or here's the way that we need to work with police, how does that get back to you, and what would be the process for police to actually begin to modify or change your practices to help meet those needs that Matt just described?
Well, I think that's one of the great things about this program is the amount of contact that we're having with our leadership group. We meet on a regular basis. And I think to put it in perspective, the police department has used the term community policing or community-oriented policing certainly through my 23 years of experience. But never before have I seen us working as closely with community partners as we are today. So like I said, we meet on a regular basis. And so the information is getting back to the department through me and other department representatives. And then we're able to immediately put into practice the ideas and things that we're just now coming up with. We have, in particular at District 3, we have a community prosecution unit that's already established and already set up to do a lot of the things that we're talking about. But the one, I think, missing link in that is the degree of contact that we're having with the social service organizations. And so I think the partnership is really kind of closing that gap and bringing it together. And like I said, I'm very hopeful. I think it's going to be a great project.
And so if it works here, it could be replicated in other neighborhoods.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Kimberly, what, if any, role is there for students? You work at the university, UWM student interested in criminology or sociology. Will they have any part to play in this whole thing?
I hope so. If you want to do some data entry, give me a call. Actually, you know, as they're planning, I think they're thinking of some neighborhood cleanups and such. I think that'd be a great opportunity to give back to your community. Everybody wants to do that. So absolutely, we're hoping to get the students involved.
And Matt, from your standpoint, would that be useful?
There's, like I talked about, neighborhoods, strong neighborhoods are able to leverage resources within itself as well as outside of. So I think we need to be creative in bringing in all sorts of partnerships, students, you know, faculty or academic expertise, policing expertise, I mean, economic expertise. So certainly there's an invitation.
And certainly the police wouldn't mind having more of those students in a neighborhood.
Absolutely. In fact, I'm hopeful we get some of the police officers involved in a different way in the neighborhoods rather than just, you know, driving by. You know, they can dig in and start working towards solving some real problems.
And the other part of the research component, not only am I talking with the citizens, the residents, I'm also doing observational research with patrol. So I've been on many ride-alongs with officers in the Washington Park area. I hear their feedback, see what they go through. They want to make an impact. They want to make a change as well.
Terrific. Well, it sounds like a great program. It goes on for 3 years, so we'll have you back as you get more of that data crunched and can share a little bit more. I think it's a fascinating project and one certainly worth watching. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Kimberly Hassel, Associate Professor at UWM's in the School of Social Welfare, joining Mike Schmitz, a lieutenant for the Milwaukee Police Department, and Matt Melendez, the project coordinator for this wonderful crime reduction initiative in the Washington Park neighborhood. Well, that's all for this week's program. We'll see you next week at the same time. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Tom Lujack.
You've been listening to UWM Today, the weekly program where you meet the faculty, staff, and students at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee who help make a difference in the lives of people in southeastern Wisconsin through their teaching, research, and community service. To learn more about UWM, go online to uwm.edu.